On college football signing day, my summy gave to me 5 offensive linemen, 4 wide receivers, 3 linebackers, cornerbacks, and defensive ends, 2 defensive tackles, quarterbacks, and tight ends, 1 running back and safety, and an athlete in a pear tree.
Bum, bum.
You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, we're going to the Super Bowl. We talk to former Texas A&M football standouts Jake Matthews and Martellus Bennett a little bit, but we have Jake Matthews momentarily on the show. We also have another former Texas A&M standout on the basketball court, Alex Caruso, on the show to talk about his adventures in the D-League and diagnose what's going wrong with this year's A&M squad. But now, first, we're going to talk about National Signing Day and the circus that is across the country and what Texas A&M's haul was here in College Station. But before we can do that, I need to bring in my partner in crime, this guy across the counter, that is President Zachary Taylor.
Why, thank you, and I have made it my mission to be the best president that I can be for this podcast, and hopefully everything will work out just fine. I'll give it 110% each and every podcast.
Zach Taylor is hashtag my president.
Hashtag my president.
Anyway,
hashtag my podcast.
Hashtag my podcast.
Not my podcast. yeah, but National Signing Day is always just such a joy. It's second favorite holiday probably to Christmas, and I can't wait to talk about these.
You're lying.
18 and 19-year-olds who haven't even seen the field in a college game yet.
You're lying. So it's National Signing Day is the propaganda holiday of the year. It's when all the coaches come in and talk to their fan bases.
It's owned by the recruiting services, kind of like Valentine's
Day.
The card companies.
Kind of. It's when all the coaches come in and say how they set out to do all these things and get all these recruits, and they did exactly that, and they got everyone. They filled their entire depth chart. All these players are just outstanding human beings, and they're going to be Heisman winners, every single one of them. And, you know, your team is going to win the national championship that year. And, don't buy the hype, because guess what? These kids are going to be around for a maximum of 5 years, and in those 5 years, a maximum of 5 programs can win the national championship, and a maximum of 5 players in the whole country can win the Heisman Trophy. And I'm just going to go ahead and go on a limb and say your team is probably not going to do that.
Wow. You are just dashing everybody's hopes and dreams right off the bat.
Yeah.
Bruh.
I'm
savage.
I am starting to gestate a cold, and I'm a bitter old man right now
because
it's National Signing Day.
And there are people who, in probably my first season or two in the biz, should we say, and before that as a casual fan, yeah, I cared about recruiting. I cared about the signing class, the numbers. But even after being in, I'm fairly young, that I've now been in doing this job for 4 or 5 years, but you come to the realization that not all these guys are going to pan out. And according, or at least with A&M's point of view, a lot of them might transfer. So getting excited about a guy who has never played a down in a college football game is pretty dang hard to do. And there are plenty of diamonds in the rough, too, where you got these 2 and 3 stars that end up being, like Johnny Manziel. They end up being your Heisman Trophy winner, whereas the 5 stars may or may not be good. I mean, Myles Garrett, you'll have Myles Garrett, but you'll also have some duds.
You encapsulated the end of my little blog column that I posted yesterday well, and that is, if you look back, and I mentioned this a couple of different times, my good friend at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Jimmy Birch, every year goes in and he has a metric he's developed to grade past recruiting classes. He goes back every to the class 4 years prior, so that would have been the 2012 class this season, and based on individual awards, all conference players of the year and things like that, and then if players go leave for the NFL early, there's a point system for that, and therefore then he re-ranks all of the FBS teams in Texas and Oklahoma. He puts what they were listed by, ranked by rivals, and then puts their new ranking 4 years later. A&M's 2012 class was ranked 15th in the nation, but they came in last of all the FBS schools in Texas and Oklahoma because the only point they tallied was Jermaine Ifedi leaving early for the NFL, because that's the class that had guys like Thomas Johnson, Matt Davis, just a whole bunch of guys who didn't end up finishing their career here at Texas A&M. But on the other hand, too, as a commenter on a Periscope with me and Robert Cessna mentioned, there are three-star quarterbacks from Kerrville out there, too, that can come in and make a pretty good impact. But those are few and far between. Your Johnny Manziels and your Myles Garretts and those kind of players are just so few and far between that the nitpicking that goes over each player and if this player is going to pick our school over their school and all that stuff, it's so futile.
And, you know, that's the thing, too. It's hard to take one side over the other, because these kids are young. Some of them don't always have the most stable household, don't always come from the most stable household. And so they don't have a lot of direction other than maybe their coaches. And so when they all of a sudden are getting hit with all of this fanfare, all this publicity, people are wanting to know where they want to go to school, people are fueling the fire of their ego, it's hard to blame them for kind of wanting to play these different games on social media and things like that. You'll have very few guys, much like Myles Garretts, who will say that they're going to do something and end up following through with it, and they are able to block everybody out. And you got to give a lot of credit, of course, to his family for that, I think. So it is, in some ways, the kids are asking for it. In other ways, you have to look at all the circumstances surrounding it and say, look, they might not know any better. And so when you're talking about, you know, the little games that people will play, or, you know, a picture of a couple of different jerseys after they're already committed to one place with a little side eye thing on Twitter. You know what I'm talking about? Exactly mm-hmm. what I'm talking about. Kyler Murray did that, you know, posting a picture of the Texas jersey after mm-hmm. he'd been committed to A&M for so long. It's one of those deals where, yeah, the fuel kind of gets fed to the kids, but how much can you really blame them?
Sure. So, I think that well, if you look at yesterday, the thing that really kind of, I don't know, bugs me, but it's just kind of like eye-rolling, is the ways that these players have to announce their commitments. And every year it escalates. It gets more outlandish and outlandish. And yesterday, the fire was really fueled by Bleacher Report, who spent out a series of commitment videos for a variety of players in very interesting ways. One of them was a commit to BYU, who hopped in a helicopter and was going to show their journey through the recruitment, his process to pick between four schools. Ultimately, the helicopter lands in Lavelle Edwards Stadium in Provo, and Cosmo Cougar runs out and he takes off his jacket and he's wearing a BYU jersey, and so he helicoptered his way into his commitment.
That's a bit much.
Oh, just wait. There's an Alabama commit who flew over to Paris and made his commitment by the Eiffel Tower.
Because that has to do what with Alabama?
I don't know. But they use the Eiffel Tower, the graphic that they put in it, they use the Eiffel Tower as the A in Alabama. And then there was a kid who committed from outer space. And that is, they used a weather balloon with a camera to get some background images of, you know, the Earth, and with graphics showed a bunch of schools, and then that he was going to pick Maryland. So he committed from outer space. Yeah. That is what happened this year. The other interesting aspect of National Signing Day, or at least the my favorite part, was the national spotlight that was shown on just the football player that we deserve. That is Kobe Buffalo Meat.
Kobe Buffalo Meat. Best name ever.
He is going to Illinois State. He is an offensive lineman, 6'7" offensive lineman. And yes, his name is Kobe Buffalo Meat. Now, I know that is my personal favorite. You kind of researched, I think, this signing day names list a little bit.
Yeah, well, by research, I mean I retweeted somebody. Matt Hinton, he's a writer, college football, CBS. So I want to give him his due for doing all of this, but it's your incoming 2017 all-name team. Tupac Blanche is an athlete. To be determined, however. I'm not for sure if he's actually committed somewhere. You got Kendarian Handy Holly, which is actually kind of a cool name. DJ Dallas, for those who are from the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, might enjoy that name a little bit. Kevon Dingle, which is always a good one. Faeve, so he's got...
So nice you say it twice.
The same, yeah, same first name and same last name. Londarius Strange, which sounds kind of like a comic book hero.
Well, it kind of sounds like, that sounds like straight out of one of those Key and Peele sketches with the East-West...
Most of these sound like a Key and... Octavius Pringle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Deneje Huzendov.
Huzendov. Okay.
My favorite, though, out of all of these, Your Majesty Sanders, committed to Jacksonville State and offensive lineman.
It's very regal.
Your Majesty.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, those are good, but Kobe Buffalo Meat will always be number one in my program and number one in my heart.
And I assume Kobe is from Native American descent. Is he not?
I would assume so. I've only actually seen the picture that they tweeted out, that Illinois State tweeted out. It's kind of, you know, it's him kind of sitting down with his helmet on, so you can't maybe tell these things.
I saw a pic of him and his family. Obviously, he's a big kid.
Uh-huh.
You don't name a kid Kobe Buffalo Meat if he's not going to be big. So he's an offensive lineman. You talked about his measurements. And yeah, he's from the Kansas area. So without going into a lot of real detail, or at least a lot of real research, I would assume that he is of Native American descent.
Right.
You don't normally hear a lot of English names with Buffalo Meat.
No, but all joking aside, yes, National Signing Day is the most overhyped sports holiday. And I'm going to just go ahead and turn around here, and I'm going to kind of look into the camera.
We're getting a real close. You want me to zoom it in or anything?
Well, you know, you can't really do that, but I'm going to kind of look over here to Periscope land and just look at me here and come into my
I got to back out of the picture for this one.
National Signing Day means nothing. Take a deep breath, kind of go, kind of.
Hold on.
National Signing Day means nothing.
But ESPN says the Aggies are the 11th best team in the nation.
Yes, but here's the thing.
They're going to be ranked
11th. I feel like I can kind of bash recruiting service and analysts a little bit because I was one for a brief point. And here's the deal. I was a JV football kicker. I know how football works, and I can write game stories. But as far as evaluating football talent, I was a baseball player. So that's a lot of people who are working to make some of these starsies and rankings. A lot of them are people who might have been JV kickers in high school. And so I just don't put a whole lot of rank into the presupposition game that is national recruiting rankings. Because, again, 2012, A&M was the 15th best class in the nation out of all 50, 60 now schools, FBS schools?
Well, I just wanted to look over something. Hold on just one sec.
They had one player who received any kind of award. Actually, they didn't even receive an award. He just left early for the NFL draft. That was the only standout moment of anything with the 2012 class.
You can look all the way up and down. And I'm using ESPN. I realize that there are a bunch of different recruiting
sites. Now, ESPN actually has some people who have a past history in football scouting, doing a lot of their metrics and rankings and stuff. So I did a story on this for the Star-Telegram a couple years ago. If you really want to try to find the real deal scoop on recruiting rankings and stars and stuff, I would err onto the side of ESPN.
By the way, the Aggies were ranked fourth in the 2014 recruiting class. Here are their top four athletes. Myles Garrett turned out to be a pretty good one. Speedy Noyle, he gone.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen, he gone.
Yeah.
Nick Harvey hasn't really filled up to his potential yet.
Right.
Jury's still out on Nick. Frankie Iheanacho is the fifth, by the way. He gone.
Right.
Deshaun Washington, Ataro Olaka, Quaylen Cunningham, Armani Watts, Josh Walker. So there are some guys on there who have filled up meaningful minutes, but...
I mean, I'd almost say other than Myles Garrett, your next best guy is Armani Watts.
Yeah. I think that's a very safe... Actually, that's not a safe bet. That's true.
Right.
Unless you talk about Jermaine Illuminor as well as Avery Genesee, who was a JUCO transfer. But, Yeah, and by the way, Luminor was a JUCO transfer as well. Zay Coven Henderson is on the list. But yeah, no. Josh Reynolds, by the way, is down there. He was a three-star JUCO transfer. So Josh Reynolds, I think, would be number two. And then Armani Watts would be number three.
That is a pretty... That was a very utilitarian class. If you want to... You have to look at it two ways. You have some guys in there who did some stuff and... have some good stats to their name at the end, but then you also look at A&M's seasons the past couple of years, and there's two ways to go about it, and you might say that the class didn't necessarily live up to their expectations, although there was players in there that really did stand out. So that all being said, before we just completely run out of time here, A&M did sign a class yesterday, and it was a pretty kind of ho-hum day for A&M yesterday, and sometimes when there are some drama on national signing day, but most of players, especially the players that are going to be what you would think key to this class and key to the future of the program, have already been on campus.
And that was big too. I can't remember ever where there were 9 guys who graduated early and are already on campus, and guys who I think when you look at them, at least for now, again, you think everybody's going to make a great impact, but these guys can make a big impact their freshman years. You're talking about Kellen Mond, who very well could be the starting QB. You're talking about Anthony Hines, who probably will be the starting Mike linebacker, and Rashad Paul, who I think is going to be one of the big wideouts. I think he's a great enough athlete. You have to get him involved somehow, some way. Mm-hmm. And so you look over that. I mean, and there are a lot of other guys, too. You got Santino Marchial. I think that's how you – Marchial? Not for sure exactly how you pronounce his last. Another guy from IMG Academy is an outside linebacker. What they need is a lot of help at linebackers, so they can get a little bit of linebacker depth there. And Jamon Osborne, of course, a highly touted recruit at wideout. So A&M is going to have quite a few freshmen. They're going to be a young team – but they'll be a talented team, I think.
Tell me what you think about this. It's something I raised yesterday. With how many holes that it seems like A&M has open heading into the season, looking at quarterback, looking at wide receiver, looking at linebacker, looking at defensive end, there's not a whole lot of depth there. Are you surprised that there's only one name on that list that is coming from a JUCO? Because that yes there is
a little bit, yeah.
There is a lot of players on here that potential wise could make an instant impact as a true freshman on this team, but usually even for schools that don't necessarily lean too heavily there, that aren't Kansas State and just bring in all the JUCO players that they can, when you get in that position where you need to fill depth quickly, usually you lean on JUCO to make that happen so that you can let these incoming freshmen have some time to develop, maybe redshirt, stay on campus a little bit and get into the system. Even no matter how good they are and how instant impact, what an instant impact they can make, a lot of times that helps these guys. And I thought that maybe there would be a few more JUCO transfers on that list.
Yeah, there's only one, Michael Clemens, defensive end out of Garland, but he attended Cisco JC up there in Cisco, 6'5", 240 pounds. It is a little bit surprising, especially when you see the pipeline that the Aggies have been able to create in Mississippi with all of those Mississippi JUCOs, because that's where a lot of talent comes from. You talk about Avery Genesee came from there. You're talking about Claude George came from
Justin Evans
came from there. So A&M has really been able to open that up. And, of course, you're going to get a lot of other SEC schools, too. Alabama, you know, the Alabamas, the Auburns, the Mississippis. I don't know if you saw the Netflix original series. What was the name of it?
Last Chance U.
Yeah. So you know how big it is there, at least with the JUCO transfers. And I am kind of surprised, and A&M could use a lot of help. And mentioned defensive end. That's going to be something that all of a sudden it went from being your strong point to could very well be a weakness. Because how many guys are you going to have step into that role? And another thing, too, is how much depth are you going to have? They're not going to have a lot of depth.
Sure.
So they're going to need Michael Clemens to be a big-time player off the bat for them.
Sure. It's really assuming a lot to look at this class and go, there's going to be a lot of guys to make an instant impact. I mean, they're going to have to make an instant impact because of necessity. That doesn't necessarily mean that they
are that good.
Are that good.
You don't want to make that presumption automatically, but they have to be
right.
Good. They have to play. It's not because they can.
Right. That makes sense. Give me one name on. You know, I think there's plenty of names on there that you can see is going to have to make that instant impact, like Anthony Hines and potentially Kellen Mond and some of those guys on there. But when you're looking on there, what's a player that stands out to you that, I don't know, maybe necessarily doesn't have to make an instant impact, but intrigues you the most, that you want to see, you're curious to see how things shake out for that player come fall?
Well, you mentioned mine, Anthony Hines. Anthony Hines, I'm really interested to see how that's going to work out, because since John Chavis has gotten here, he has been kind of dealing with half a deck when it comes to the linebacking core. He hasn't had a full depth chart when it comes to that. Hasn't had a true Mike linebacker. Now he's got some guys with the physical tools. So, you know, it's all Tyrell Dotson a little bit. You know, Richard Moore could be a solid outside guy. He's a little bit smaller guy, but a good outside guy. Ataro Laka, if he can stay healthy, is naturally an outside linebacker. And so now if you got a guy like Anthony Hines, and again, when you look at a defense, typically that middle linebacker is kind of the quarterback of the defense, and he helps set guys up. Can he do that as a true freshman? Can he learn that quickly? It's not the physical talents that you wonder about. It's how much can he learn up here? And being an early enrollee, I think, is big in that.
Yeah, you know, mine is Rashad Paul, because he's gotten a lot of accolades, honors, praise at the high school level, of course, being Mr. Texas football, and was there on the field at the Texas Bowl when A&M was playing there, getting his award for that honor.
And tweeting, by the way.
And tweeting. Tweeting a lot. He had a lot of opinions about A&M's offense. But I think he's a guy that could very well step in and make that instant impact and really have a big role on this team from the get-go. I also think that he is a guy that would probably play a similar position as Christian Kirk. And so while he might be ready to step in and take that role and could make an impact, is he a guy that you let sit back and either redshirt or just see limited action and learn from Christian Kirk, that hopefully he might kind of fill that void? Because you got to think that this might be Christian Kirk's last year at A&M, and he could be a guy that kind of fill that role right away. So I think he's a guy that could see the field right away, but I also think he's a guy that you could maybe hold back and let kind of develop a little bit more under the tutelage of Christian Kirk. But also, you have to look at the fact that he is he's a 2A player coming in here. And I watched him play, and while, yes, of course, he was the best player on the field every time he was out there, he was not playing the position he's going to be playing in high school. He was playing quarterback, and he was basically just running all over the field the entire game. And it's hard, other than just kind of seeing his physical his physical attributes and running the ball, to necessarily judge how he's going to do when all the players that he's playing against are of comparable speed, size, physical ability, and how that translates to the next level.
Yeah, exactly. And as you talked about, I think they have enough depth at wideout that they don't have to rush him along. I think that they can take their time, but I think he still will see a lot of meaningful snaps throughout the year. I just think he's talented enough, and he's a guy that they'll expect to put in some big time game situations. So that's at least my point on things. Well, guys, gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Fighting Texas Aggie great Alex Caruso. He's gonna be joining us on the line, and we'll talk a little bit with Alex, at least as far as things going on there in the NBA D League. He's currently playing for the Oklahoma City Blue, and talk a little bit about this Aggie basketball team, what he thinks. He's gotten to watch quite a few games of them this year, so he will give us his take on that. All that and more coming up next. Again, you're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Pew, 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 pew!
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown, a special guest today. Actually, we got a chock full of star-studded cast today.
We're going to peek in the podcast today.
Besides ourselves, joining us is fighting Texas Aggie great, as well as Oklahoma City Blue player, Alex Caruso. Alex, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on, man.
And I know they're at in the D-League. Of course, the Oklahoma City Blue being the D-League team for the Oklahoma City Thunder. You're having a pretty good year.
Yeah. I mean, individually and as a team, we're hitting our stride. I think I'm learning a lot. I think I'm starting to play a little better. And then we just had a big road trip to take over first place in our division this past weekend.
Now, what's interesting, too, is that with the Thunder, of course, being in the same town as you guys, not a lot of D-League teams are in the same town as the NBA team. So how much interaction do you have with those guys?
Yeah, so, I mean, their games, I mean, they play so many games. They play 30 more games than us every year. So, I mean, we don't get to see those guys a whole lot because, I mean, as much as they travel and move, we're doing the same thing. But during the summer and a little bit of preseason, we got to work out and kind of hang out and see how they work on a daily basis. So that was really interesting to see.
Gotcha. And I know you initially got signed with the 76ers. I actually had you on and then ended up with Oklahoma City. Just kind of moving things around. But as far as your first year as a pro, some good, some bads. I mean, I know you're a College Station boy, grew up here, played collegiate basketball here. So do you ever miss it?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I miss College Station all the time. I mean, that's my home. It's where I grew up. I miss knowing where everything is in the town. I miss being able to get everywhere. And besides the train, I don't miss the train. But I mean, it's been a good first year. Like I said, I'm learning a lot. There's definitely learning curves. I mean, you nobody plays perfect basketball, especially their first year out. So, I mean, just getting adjusted to the game and enjoying playing basketball for my living. I think that's been the biggest positive thing. Just enjoying going to the gym or going to the game every day.
Hey, Alex. Yeah, going into the D League. Is there anything that has surprised you about playing D League ball or kind of playing even professional ball at all?
I think something about the D League is that there's a bunch of negative views, I think, on it and just how poorly it was run. And I think that the NBA has done a really good job to kind of bring the D League along to make it a little nicer and a little cleaner. As far as just like travel aspect, gyms, accommodations, just making sure that the players are getting treated better than I think it was 2 or 3, maybe 4 years ago. I think the D League had a bad rap. So I think everything's a little bit nicer. I don't know, that's a hard word to understand when it comes to maybe basketball. It's just the accommodations, the level of players and talent in the league. I think it surprised me how different it was than, I guess, some of the horror stories that we heard coming into the first year.
Visiting with Texas A&M career steals leader Alex Caruso, and he is playing for the Oklahoma City Blue in the Development League. And Alex, I know your dreams ultimately are going to the NBA, being one step away from achieving your dream. And I know guys get called up from the D-League all the time. So that's obviously something that is probably on your mind every single day, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. That's the reason I stayed here and didn't go overseas, is that I'm trying to build my game and kind of create a name for myself and some type of reputation within the National Basketball Association to try and make the major leagues. You know, I'm every day I'm going to the gym trying to improve and learn and hopefully one day this year, hopefully next year, hopefully some year down the road, I end up making it. And I'm just going to keep pushing and keep working until I can.
Well, of course, here in College Station, we are focused in on that Texas A&M men's basketball team. Have you gotten to keep tabs with much that's going on here or watch many of the games, or is that something that's kind of had to slip through the cracks as you've been doing what you've been doing up there?
No, yeah, I've had ample time. I mean, when I'm not at practice or shooting or playing games, I'm watching basketball on TV.
Right.
To keep up with them, and obviously I stay in contact with the guys that I played with, and even some of the younger guys that I don't know as well. But just reaching out to them, trying to see how everything's going, how I can help them out every now and then. But I mean, it's been fun watching them. I'm watching them go through some growing pains, but I think they're going to be all right in the end.
Yeah, how would you, I know it's been a little bit of a difficult season for them compared to, of course, what y'all did last year. How would you kind of diagnose what some of their growing pains are this season?
Yeah, I mean, the tough thing for them is they only have a couple guys that have played more than one season under their belt. I mean, if you look at the starting five, any combination of the starting five, I mean, we only have Tony's played 2 years technically, but his first year he played sparingly. JC, he played 4 years at Lipscomb and then comes here, and the SEC is just a little different. So, I mean, there's still some adjustments for him. Tavario might be the only guy that's had multiple years of SEC basketball under his belt, and even his minutes have been sparing over the career that he's had. So for those guys to come in and just expect to win 12 to 14 games in conference, it's a lot harder than that sounds from the outside looking in. I know they want to, and I know that they're trying as hard as they can. I know there's just little things here and there that it took me 3 or 4 years to realize and get to that point. That's why it took me 4 years to have a successful SEC season and get to the NCAA tournament. But I mean, they're so skilled and so talented that I think we take for granted they have to understand and learn how to win. That's a really hard skill to develop, especially in a big conference like the SEC, where every night you got somebody that can beat you.
Yeah, well, and turnovers have seemed to really been something that's plagued the team through most of SEC play. And actually, it's funny, your name has come up several times as someone who may not have been one of your fortes when you started playing there, but you developed into one of the better point guards on the team. And Coach talked a little bit about some of the drills and some of the stuff that y'all did in practice, especially for you to develop into that solid point guard, and that they've brought those back this season. What do you remember about your development and what Coach did to kind of bring you into that player that you were last season and you are today?
I think the biggest thing for me was that I took 2 years of playing against guards that were really good playing against. I mean, my freshman year I had guys that were more athletic, quicker, J. Michael Reese, Fabian Harris, and the next year Alex Robinson comes in. And then my junior year, I kind of had to take the reins and push forward. And then senior year, Anthony Collins comes in, which is an almost 6 assists career average. I think it was just each year kept going against good competition, and that kind of molded me, and I learned, obviously, just playing through games and playing through practice, just going at it every day and trying to get better. And I think that's the thing that I had the privilege of doing, is that I had time, and it's hard on these young guys because we expect so much after we went almost NCAA tournament my junior year and then Sweet 16 last year with the conference title, that we expected to just roll over. And I think that's been the biggest struggle to learn all that. They're going on their second year, and I mean, Admon, not necessarily a true point guard. JC's more of a true point guard, I guess. He's still a better scorer than I think he is a facilitator. And Chris Collins, I mean, it's the first time he's played real basketball in 2 years almost. So I think it's just the learning curve opportunity to take advantage of when there were no expectations, but lower expectations my sophomore and junior year, to eventually build up into my senior year. So I think it was just me being able to practice every day for 2 years, and then ultimately the perfect storm came together when we had a bunch of young guys and then some older guys that were good too.
Well, talking about the point guard position, but I think anybody would tell you, I think the real strength of this team this year is the bigs. Obviously, Tyler being in his sophomore year, but Robert Williams, how much would you like to play with that cat?
Man, I don't know who I was texting the other day, but I said, man, I wish I could have played 1 year with Rob. all I would have had to done when I got in the lane is just kind of throw it up there, and he would finish it for me.
Yeah.
And man, that guy's an incredible talent. I mean, there's talent all over the court, but you can tell there's a special kind of there's a special ability there that he's still just tapping into that I think is really, really catching the eye of the outside world, outside the SEC, or even college basketball. I mean, he's got stuff that you can't teach, and he's learning every day. And I think he's progressed a lot from the beginning of the season too. Like just seeing where he's come from, how more mature I think he's gotten on the defensive end, learning how to play the angles on blocks, and just being an animal on the boards. He's a real fun player to watch.
Yeah, there's lots of projections and talk and rumblings that he could be a guy that could be a draft pick this year after his first year from playing some pro ball and kind of seeing that side of basketball. Do you think that could be a possibility for him?
Yeah, I mean, the hardest thing for me whenever I try to look at players and see how they'd play at the next level is the potential thing. I'm not a very good judge of potential, but, I mean, you can tell that Robert has an enormous amount of potential. Just the skill set that he has with the wingspan, the height, the athleticism, it's stuff that you don't see a lot. So, I mean, I understand completely wherever these scouts are putting him at, ranking him at. I mean, he's a hard worker. He's a quiet guy. He doesn't get in trouble. So, I mean, that all adds up to a great prospect.
Visiting with Alex Caruso on the My Aggie Nation podcast. And, Alex, before we let you go, I know that you talked about being in touch with these guys, and you were a very vocal leader when you were with the team. I know it was a little bit different dynamic because there were it was a senior-laden team, at least it was last year, a lot of veterans on that squad. But if you were with the team now, could you give us a little insight into maybe what you'd be telling them at this point in the season?
Yeah, I think for me, it's one game at a time. I mean, the conference season's so long, I would just tell them, you got to take it one game, one night, one possession, just whatever your job is, you got to do it, and you got to do it from the very jump. I think they could benefit from their sense of urgency being raised a little at the beginning of the game, and I think that's something that they maybe took for granted last year because we had guys that were 3 or 4 year veterans of playing that it kind of just happened and it was easy to follow. And I think when you have to create yourself, it's a little harder. So I think I would just tell them the sense of urgency needs to be at all time high and just play for each other. And whenever you play for the guy next to you, it's a lot easier to play hard and do little things to win.
Definitely. And here is the most important question of all things going on back here at College Station. What restaurant do you miss the most back here being in Oklahoma City?
What restaurant? Man, that's a tough one. I don't think it's going to be anything too chain related. Maybe I would say Wings and More Fuego. I think those two are the guys that I miss the most.
As long as, I mean, Miles put Fuego, I think, on the international map. Whenever he did his,
yeah,
whenever he
was,
did his open, so but
Fuego,
but you have,
better give him a little check for the doors.
Exactly, and you have to remember that Fuego, you know, Miles is a transplant. Alex grew up here, so he knows all the holes in the walls, everything else.
Of course.
Wings and More is basically where we have all of our podcast planning meetings. So I mean, that's the place to go
spot,
when you end up getting the sauce
Deacon
all
one,
over them.
The Deacon one is the OG Wings and More. That's the original one from when I was back at like middle school and high school. But the one at university is pretty good too.
Gotcha. Alex, thanks so much for joining us, man. Really do appreciate it. Good luck throughout the rest of this season, and really looking forward to seeing where your career goes from here.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks. And that wraps up our visit with former Texas A&M men's basketball player as well as current Oklahoma City Blue player in the NBA D League, Alex Caruso. We appreciate Alex coming on. Next, we are going to be talking some Super Bowl. Super Bowl coming up next. We'll be visiting a little bit with Jake Matthews. Of course, he also a former Texas A&M player, an Aggie great, as well as hearing Travis's little excursions all around Houston and opening night of the Super Bowl. That coming up next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown. I'm here with A&M legend, pretty much, Jake Matthews, now here at the Super Bowl, here at opening night. Jake, what does it mean to you to be back here in Houston, kind of where it all started for you?
It's awesome, you know, especially being an hour and a half down the road from, you know, where I went to school at A&M, and it's special, you know, having all my family here. This is where my career kind of took off. This is where I, you know, played high school football and grew up here. It's a special feeling, though, let alone be playing in, you know, the biggest game in the world, but, you know, doing it in my, you know, own backyard, it's exciting.
Martellus Bennett on the other side. Is that a guy you keeping in any contact with or had any contact with prior to this game?
Not too much. He played with Kevin at A&M, my older brother. I think I missed him by 4 years or so, but you know, I think it's pretty cool that, you know, we got an Aggie representing both teams.
We're here at opening night. What was the craziest question? A lot of crazy stuff happens here. What's the craziest question you've gotten so far?
Craziest one? I thought it was pretty weird that E! News came up to me and asked me a bunch of true-false questions. I was like, really? You want to talk to me? But, no, it's been fun. It's been interesting.
Right. What's your favorite A&M tradition as you look back at your time there?
Geez, really just the 12th man. The way we the fans show up to games and, you know, stand the whole time and cheer for us, that was one of the coolest things. I seen a fan base like that. I'll never forget that.
Snap back to reality. Oh,
there goes gravity.
Yeah, we're back here, not in Houston at the Super Bowl opening night. That was Monday night. We got to catch up with former Texas A&M great Jake Matthews there.
You're never a former great. You're always great. You could be a former player.
Okay, you know what?
Have you gotten that from anybody yet? Has anybody tried to correct you on Aggie traditions? Yeah. Any readers or?
Oh yeah, well, just everybody, people in my office.
One time, I posted something about Jamil Showers came back for Pro Day, or at least for the Aggie Pro Day, and worked out. And I posted a picture via social media of one of our stations, and I said former Texas A&M quarterback and UTEP minor, or former Texas A&M and UTEP minor quarterback, or something. But somebody read it as if I was saying he was a former Aggie. And there's
but you're
no such,
always an Aggie.
There's no such thing as a former Aggie. You're always an Aggie. No matter if you went here for a semester, you're always an Aggie.
I'm not jump. I know better than to jump in on this sarcasm.
Well, but I am an Aggie, and there are a lot of things I love about Texas A&M, obviously. And traditions, yes, I love traditions. But there are a few. Maybe it's because I wasn't in the core. Maybe I'm not red ass enough, as they would say. But there are a couple things I'm kind of like, really? But yeah, Jake Matthews, the Matthews family, the first family of Texas A&M, basically.
We had got to talk to Jake Matthews, got to kind of stand on the periphery of Martellus Bennett. Before we get into that a little bit, I got to talk through the absolute ridiculous circus that was Super Bowl opening night, which, of course, was formerly known as 3 years ago, just Media Day.
Yeah.
Just insane. Absolutely insane.
And it's so crazy to me, too, how he was talking about E! News. He's talking about all these people that don't cover sports. These organizations, these media outlets that have absolutely nothing to do with sports. They're just there to ask goofy questions.
Well, and I'm going to correct him a little bit because E! News did come talk to him when I first got over there and was asking him just some generic questions. But what he was referring to was right before I got to talk to him there, a Sports Illustrated reporter with the camera and everything came up and was asking him, kind of did a bit with them called Fake News or Real News, and they kind of said something and he had to decide if it was fake news or real news. And half of the whole thing was just, did Rob Gronkowski actually do this or not? One of them, the only one I can remember, was did he just find some random girl at like a Vegas hotel to take to his brother's wedding or something like that, which apparently was true.
What was the whole thing about his high school basketball? Did they ask him about that? Have you heard about that? That he intentionally missed a free throw so that his team would finish with
a funny number?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't over there when they talked about that, but I saw that that was kind of bouncing around. I wasn't I stayed away from so the setup, it was at Minute Maid Field, and everything was down on the infield area. They had kind of carpeting down, and along probably what would have been the back of the infield, they had these giant, like, stadium-high scaffolding that had giant screens in front of them, and in the middle of it was a stage, and in front of that stage was, like, six rate risers with a little desk on it and a little chair and a microphone and some speakers and a backdrop. And
basically an amphitheater.
And, right, and those six little risers were for, like, the six primetime players, the ones that would probably draw the most attention, the coach, Tom Brady, Gronk, some of those guys were those. And then the players, everyone else, was just standing around on the floor. So anyone could just kind of walk up and grab
all the little people. Not physically, but yeah.
Right, no, because Jake Matthews is not a little person.
No, he's not.
But surprisingly enough, there was a lot of people wanting to talk to Jake Matthews, of course, hometown guy, and So there was always a pretty big crowd around him. When the Patriots and so they went for an hour, the Falcons went for an hour, they went off. There was about a 45-minute break in between where ex-ambassadors played, which I like ex-ambassadors. That was a pretty nice little treat.
That's a band, right?
It's a band. They okay. do that Into the Jungle song. It's like I think on all the Sam Adams commercials now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't like some holdovers from the Obama administration or something like
ex-ambassadors.
Yeah. Actual.
Yeah. No, not EXX, just the letter X. But, and then the Patriots came out later, and I tell you what, there was probably more people around Martellus Bennett on the infield floor, because he wasn't one of the people up on the risers, than there were some of the people up on the risers. It was ridiculous.
Well, I believe that, because Martellus obviously is from the Houston area, and so a local boy coming back, and he also says a lot of stuff.
I mean, they had a whole
he's very quotable
bit on the Sports Center Live, because he was in one of the press conferences yesterday. They had a whole bit of just sound bites from Martellus, just him talking about how using curse words in statements just makes it better than not using. And he was just firing off, you know, curse words. He did it on Monday night too, when you have all these cameras and everything around, where usually you hold more of a decorum, but that's just Marty B.
So they just asked him just to cuss as fast as he could? Is that what it was?
No. I don't know. They didn't really play the question. I don't know what the context, but he said, you know, it just sounds, the soundbite was something like, it just sounds better to curse. Like, you could say, that's really great. Or you could say, you know, beep, that's really great. And it just makes more of an impact. People are like, oh, man, that must be really great.
That's what Aggies are all about, is impact.
Yeah.
Impacting our world for the better.
Yeah, there you go. So, it was an experience to say, and then of course we have, you know, like 30 minutes to turn a story around, and there was more concert, and then they shot off a whole 10-minute fireworks show inside Minute Maid Park with the roof closed, and we were all just in the concourse working.
And
so
just,
that was
it real smoky after
that?
Oh,
it was smoky, and it was loud.
So the real question is, did you get a look at the new center field there at Minute Maid?
It was under construction. I should have taken a picture. Yeah, under construction. I mean, it was just kind of a big hole out there.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know with all the screens and everything, you know.
Right.
Because ultimately, we want to talk about baseball. I don't care
about
the Super Bowl.
Sure, the fans probably couldn't have seen it, but we were up in our kind of work area was up on the third base concourse, and we went down the stadium steps there to get onto the
field.
So
were there
access.
People just in the bleach, like the seats?
The entire infield lower level seats from base to base was full.
And they couldn't come out on the field. They were just sitting there.
No, just sitting there. Now, they had the big screens that were on those scaffoldings.
Yeah. And did they have anybody mic'd up?
I don't know if they handed them out or if you bought them. I bet you they handed them out. These little round earpiece, kind of looks like a Bluetooth headset. That had like six channels. It was a radio transmitter, and had like six channels on it. And it had, while the players were talking on the podiums, it had six split screens that you could see. Well, this is number one. So if you flip to number one, I can hear Tom
Brady.
That's
insane.
If you flip to number two, I can hear, you know, Bill Belichick. And then like number six was like just the NFL Network feed.
It's like a drive-in movie.
Kind of, yeah.
For watching people.
Kind of, yeah.
That's insane.
Well, and the other insane part was just the random, like, celebrities, quote-unquote, that were walking around. I mean, you had, and I don't know, you might have to look this up for me while I'm talking about it. I don't really know what this guy does, but I've seen him. I know that he is a celebrity.
So you don't even know his name?
J.B. Smooth.
J.B. Smooth.
I know he's a celebrity.
He's a comedian.
He's a comedian.
He's been in a bunch of TV shows. I want to say,
I saw him on the Match Game. He was one of the panelists on that new Match Game with Alec Baldwin. But that's that's my only frame of reference for J.B. Smoove.
I was trying to think if J.B. Smoove was on the Best Damn Sports Show period, but I don't think so.
Speaking of a flashback.
Yeah, for
geez.
Real. But he's been on a lot of different shows. I remember he was on some show with Brad Garrett.
That was John Sally that was on the Best Damn Sports Show period.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well,
but they kind of, yeah, kind of look like. But he was over there. He asked Tom Brady. First off, he told Tom Brady that Tom Brady is a 10 in appearance.
Oh, well, that was nice of him.
That was nice, yeah. But he said, would you trade 5 attractiveness points to win the Super Bowl this time? And Tom Brady, of course, said yes.
Well, he's already got Giselle locked up,
there
right?
There you go.
I mean, Giselle's not going to be going anywhere
there
soon.
There you go. And then, but here is the celebrity of all celebrities. And it is an unexpected celebrity, because not only did the celebrity draw the attention of the media and the fans, but he drew the attention of a lot of the players that were there.
Ric Flair.
It was not Ric Flair.
That would have been awesome if Ric Flair was there, though.
Dressed in full character, walking around interviewing people in full character for the TV station Nickelodeon, was Kel Mitchell, dressed as Ed from Good Burger.
I did see that, yes.
And there, I literally was, because I was chasing him down to try to get a picture to put on Twitter and everything like that, and in front of me were three Falcon offensive linemen, like, jogging to try to go get a Snapchat selfie with him.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, oh, dude, that's Kel, man. I gotta go get a Snapchat with him. And, like, it just, he was the life of the party.
Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. I'm going to take your order.
I got to hear it live and in person.
I'm sure he didn't get tired of saying that at all.
No, the 11-year-old in me was just pretty giddy about it.
You know, I think he's a preacher now. I think he kind of put the fame behind him, and he was a preacher from last I heard.
Really?
He might be trying to get back into it a little bit, but obviously his career went a different path than Keenan's did.
Right. Keenan is like lives at 30 Rock now, just constantly.
Even though
SNL.
I thought he was retiring. I think this might be his last season.
Keenan?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. But
which is
thing.
Upsetting because he's one of my favorite people on there. They're getting rid of all the talented people for some strange reason. Anyways,
hot sports take.
I got a bone to pick with SNL over many things,
take.
But
yeah.
That's one of them.
Well, anyway, Media Day is just an absolute zoo. Don't actually, if you're in the media and ever going to go be a part of, well, I guess opening night is what it's called now, don't expect to actually get like a whole lot of work done.
Now, are you going back either tonight or tomorrow?
I am going back. Assuming I can shake this cold. I'm going back Saturday, probably.
Okay.
And to just be in town.
And then you're going
to
be at the game?
Because we actually have to go get... We got a credential when I got there Monday. We have to actually go back and get a different credential for game day.
Because I would assume they're not... Because we've been in that press box, and they're not going to let all those media outlets in that press box.
No, and I think my credential is for an auxiliary table somewhere else in the stadium. They'll probably put a table up in the stand somewhere.
Well, that would actually be... I would rather do that.
Yeah,
if I'm
kind of excited about
that. I would rather be in the stands.
Depending on where it is, I'm kind of maybe a little excited about it. Now, the thing I heard, and I don't... This is me totally going off the cuff here because I don't know, but it seems like I heard rumors that they're going to do the halftime show on the roof?
Yeah, Lady Gaga apparently was wanting to do a halftime show on the roof.
Which would be a little disappointing for me because I kind of wanted to at least experience and see.
Maybe if there
show.
Was something, because it does open up in the top, correct?
Right.
So maybe there's some kind of way that she's singing she kind of rappels down.
Yeah.
Look, Lady Gaga, I wouldn't really put
Gaga.
Anything. Gaga. I wouldn't put anything past her as to what she's going to do for her show.
Marty,
she's a very talented lady and a great performer.
Bringing this back to the Aggies, Marty B was pretty pumped about Lady Gaga doing the halftime show because of her kind of zany creativeness, which isn't unlike Marty B.
Some of hers is zany, some of it's downright creepy.
Well, he said, his quote was, anyone who is confident enough to wear a meat dress is all right with me. So,
no.
Yeah.
If she does something like that, then I'm probably going to change the channel. But she's a great performer. She knocked the L out of the national anthem last year at the Super Bowl.
The L.I.?
Yeah, yeah. The L.I. out of the...
Last year was X-Lex.
The L. X-Lex.
No, just L.
Last year was just L. Yeah, because
2 years ago was X-Lex.
Yeah, but last year was L, and she really did a great job of the national anthem. And she's got a lot of songs that everybody knows.
Hey, it seems like just about... Unless it's like Madonna, it seems like every year. But even I think that year, I can't remember who it is, but somebody pops up.
CeeLo Green.
Yeah, somebody pops up that you weren't expecting.
Well, I think everybody kind of knew Beyonce was going to be there last year. I tell you what, and I actually had a dream about this, believe it or not, and I've been preaching this for years. You know how every now and then they'll kind of do a flashback? I know they had Paul McCartney a few years ago. They had The Who a couple of years ago. AC/DC needs to do a daggum Super Bowl halftime show before they're dead.
Here's the deal, though. It's in Houston. Don't you think it's going to be... What if Garth came out?
Now, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. George Strait? What about George Strait and Lady Gaga?
But, I mean, it doesn't necessarily just because it's in Houston, because last time it was in Houston, we had the Janet Jackson whole debacle.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't remember any country artists singing.
No, that was
that
Janet
one.
Jackson, Justin Timberlake.
Right. Yeah, well, I know, but yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I don't know if they'll necessarily bring a country artist. But you
hey,
would think with
hey,
it being
Justin
Houston,
Timberlake
be
has had a lot of Super Bowl-related advertisements out there. Maybe Justin Timberlake, which I would fangirl a little bit.
Yeah.
I kind of have a little bit of man crush on Justin Timberlake.
AC/DC, though, man. Apparently Don Johnson's back.
Okay. His
voice is okay, I think, from everything I understand.
But they would have to be a headliner, man. They're not going to be like...
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Second fiddle
I'm not
to
saying that they're
going to
show
Lady
they're
going
to pop up on Sunday. I'm saying they need to be the full-fledged thing.
Oh,
everybody
you're talking
knows
about future Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows their songs. They've never done one.
Yeah.
I mean...
I'm talking
can you
about,
imagine they go, but that was about to rock! And the pyrotechnics all over the place.
I thought we needed like a dump button there
and
for
getting,
a second. What were
and
you
getting,
doing?
And getting ready for the Super Bowl. What else will pump you up? I would go to a Super Bowl just to see AC/DC at halftime.
Huh. Well, yeah, there you go.
I'm just saying.
I just was more concerned about who is going to be in a supporting role to Lady Gaga.
Don't they normally announce that,
dress?
Though? It normally isn't like just
no,
a surprise.
I don't think so. I feel like...
Because everybody knew Beyonce was coming on the stage last
I don't,
year.
But with Katy Perry, it was Missy Elliott. I don't remember that being
no,
like
No, with
a...
Katy Perry, it was Left Shark.
Well, yeah.
Left Shark was the one for
that
Katy
is,
Perry.
That is true. So. That is true. But yeah, so we have Mardi B and Jake Matthews in the Super Bowl this weekend. Hopefully I can pull some audio from being out down there at Super Bowl LI. And hopefully I won't have to walk 10 miles like I did on Monday.
Good exercise.
This next time, because that was unfortunate.
Don't wear boots.
I was.
Wear tennis shoes.
I was wearing boots. So I will not make that mistake again. But that's all the time that we have this week for the My Aggie Nation podcast. There is so much going on. We have basketball. We have softball starting up here in a week, but we also have the Super Bowl. That's what's going to dominate the sports world this weekend, and we'll be excited to break that down a little bit next week and talk about how Jake Matthews and Martellus Bennett did in that game. So, for Zach Taylor over there, I'm Travis Brown over here, and this right here is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. And if we want to keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. I want to make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't